Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
He's out there to make him look as good as possible. So this was simply a, hey, the Braves are signing Yasiel Puig, and then there's no details on the contract. Generally means something small. Maybe it's 1 year, maybe it's two, but when you factor in the proration, it's not really going to move the needle all that much. Dibs, Giants, and did they make a mistake by not signing Yasiel Puig?
I think so, and it would be a perfect way to turn the page toward the future of the San Francisco Giants with a player who, while not very popular, certainly wouldn't have had to deal with the Madison Bumgarner discomfort, because Bumgarner's not here anymore. Buster's not here. And you asked earlier about who is the face of this franchise, and you thought maybe Johnny Cueto, and I was thinking Pablo Sandoval. Either way, Pablo and Johnny Cueto, they're both reaching the end of their tenure here. Brandon are both about to be gone. Evan Longoria is down to the last couple of years. I thought bringing in Yasiel Puig would have been an opportunity in the short term to inject a little bit of excitement into the club. That said, him on Atlanta, I think the Braves are a great dark horse team this year with that lineup they have. If Puig can do anything at all with the bat, and having a DH throughout the National and the American League is going to help Yasiel Puig, because he doesn't have to go through the rigors of paying attention in the outfield, which is sometimes his biggest challenge. So I like the signing for the Braves, and I thought the Giants should have brought him in.
29 years old, Lo, hit .267 over 149 games last year with Cincinnati and Cleveland, hit 24 home runs as well. Would you have liked to see him in orange and black? You can answer that first, or you can, I think you were going to ask Dib something, so you can follow up.
No,
right,
it's pretty much the same. It was like, yeah, I was going to be like, I'd love to have seen him with the Giants. Madison wasn't here. I know these guys didn't necessarily get along. You had Forhan, who's been at that, you know, in LA, he's been in that organization, so knows the players, and they were fiddling around with him, thinking about the opportunity. What do you have? Would he have helped this team to win? Absolutely. What do you think? What was the biggest deal, Dibs? You think the contract money? What was the biggest deal why the Giants wouldn't go in that, you know, to bring in another guy who's has some name recognition, who's different, who would have probably put some butts in, well, not butts in the seats, but got some more viewerships on TV?
A cardboard in the seats is our new expression. You know, a player like that's going to put a lot of cardboard in the seats, a lot of cutouts in the seats. I think, Lo, the way you laid that out and the fact that you mentioned Farhan, who was in L.A. when Puig was there, that probably was the overriding factor in all of this, because if Farhan loved Yasiel Puig and Puig got a contract that's so small that the agent won't even divulge the number, it clearly wasn't about money. It was more about either fit with the clubhouse that they have now or Yasiel Puig himself, because we've seen Puig be peculiar. We've seen Puig have brain cramps in the outfield. Yes, he's a productive hitter at times, but Farhan obviously had the closest look at Yasiel Puig than anybody. So the fact that the Giants didn't sign him, I think, tells you everything you need to know about how the organization feels about him, especially if the contract is as minuscule as Joe is theorizing that it is.
See, I think it's something different. I think if you sign Yasiel Puig, you have expectations. And I think that's the thing that the Giants realize that puts them in fantastic shape for this season. There are no expectations, especially now that Buster Posey's sitting out the year. There isn't one human being walking planet Earth or even crawling planet Earth that thinks the Giants are going to do anything this season. That is such good news for Gabe Kapler and Farhan Zaidi. There is no reason to mess with it, especially when it's a fluky 60-game season that no one's going to give you credit for anyway. Think about this. Zaidi comes in, and he's taking over for guys in Sabian and Evans that are beloved. They helped deliver three World Series championships, right? Like, this organization is just locked in as all-timers amongst the fan base. And Zaidi's, one of his first big moves is going to be to allow or just kind of move on from Bruce Bochy, which is not going to be exciting to anyone in the fan base, right? Bochy plays it like a pro and, quote, retires. Good for him because he's not dealing with this year, but he's eventually going to be back, you know, barring health and all that stuff. So Zaidi steps into this first year, and everyone's already looking at him in a questionable light, but no one's going to hold him to anything because it's Bochy's final year, and it's just one of these, hey, you know, let him ride it out. Good luck. They're hot at the trade deadline. You don't need to trade Bumgarner. Just give him a run. Give him a run, Farhan. It's a free year. Farhan Zaidi got to spend a free year trying to retool the farm system, trying to get a good crop of young guys in there, trying to clear out some of the dead weight on these contracts, just trying to get his feet wet with the organization. Then he goes out and Bochy retires and he hires Gabe Kapler. And no one in town is excited about the Kapler hire. No one, right? That's it. Like, there's not a single fan that's excited about Gabe Kapler because you're taking a legend in Boch who's won three World Series and is beloved, and you're replacing him with a guy who, A, has done nothing, and B, comes in with baggage because of the thing that happened when he was with Farhan in L.A. and the girl and the players in the hotel room. So now everyone's getting on him for this. So he's got no track record of success, and he comes with baggage. So you're sitting there with a very controversial hire, and everyone looking at this organization, no one's bought into you yet. And guess what happens? COVID. And it gets shortened to a 60-game season. So no one's taking the season all that seriously. No fans are going to be in the seats, so you don't have to worry about signing anybody to draw people to the ballpark because no one can attend any of these games. And Buster Posey, your most marketable player, comes out and says, I'm not playing this season. Birth of twin girls. They were born prematurely. I need to be at home. Everyone applauds. Literally no expectations. You sign Puig, now all of a sudden people are putting an eye on the team. Not saying you're going to win the World Series, but if you've got Puig and Cueto and Samardzija is pitching well and Tony Watson's coming out of the bullpen and a couple of young guys start hitting well like Yaz and Dickerson like we saw last year, and maybe you get a decent season out of Brandon Crawford, and hey, Panda and Pence are back. Yay, maybe they get something going. Suddenly you get off to a 5-2 start. People might start expecting something, right? They might start paying close attention to you. Now they're willing to give you a pass. That's why I think they passed on Yasiel Puig. You have an absolute free pass, Gabe Kapler, year one. So if Kapler is just player-friendly and says all the right things, a year's going to go by, no one's going to remember the drama from L.A., no one's going to remember any of that stuff, and you're going to be a year removed from Boch, so you're kind of going to be willing to give him more of a chance. Farhan now gets 2 years to retool the organization. Oh, by the way, 2022 is the year. That's when Belt's off the books. That's when Crawford's off the books. That's when Samardzija's gone. You're getting close to the end of Cueto. You're getting close to the end of Posey. 2022 is what they're playing for. If 2019 was a free one for Farhan and 2020 is a free one for Farhan and Gabe Kapler, all you got to get through is 2021. And then 2022, here's the year. Bart can come up. Ramos can come up. You got plenty of money to spend on free agents, and you can put a new product out there that people can get behind. I think ultimately you don't sign Puig because you don't want any expectations to be raised, because literally no one expects anything right now.
It's interesting you say that, because you're basically then a year away from where things are going to start to really matter, because you look at next year, July of 2021. I can't believe we're already going to be up in the year 2021, by the way, but that's a panic moment for another segment. You're going to have Hunter Bishop, you're going to have Elio Ramos, you're going to have Joey Bart. All these young players will have showed up in the major leagues, and you'll have an idea of what you have going into that 2022 year. And I think Evan Longoria might be the only guy. Buster Posey's got a buyout before then. I think Cueto's got a buyout. We know Samardzija will be gone, and the two Brandons. So you'll have a chance at that point to really start the clock. By the start of next season, you can kind of start to get a sense for what Farhan has done through the draft and how are they going to really get their minor league players to get some playing time, and whether or not Gabe Kapler can be a good major league manager for this team.
And think about it like this. You get into the next season, if they're not playing well, who's going to come down their avenue? Who's going to be like, hey, Farhan, this is year three. We're expecting something. Immediately the defenders, and there are nothing but defenders in this town because that's how it works. So you're immediately going to have people going, wait a minute. Year one was Boch's final year. Like, what were you going to do? Year two was COVID. What did you expect him to do? Buster wasn't playing, right? I think now we start judging Farhan based on, you know, the year 2021 because we want our interviews and we want our access and we want to kiss the orange and black butt to make sure we get what we need to produce at a certain level. And y'all know who I'm talking about. So the reality is no one's coming down their lane. You get two free years here. And then by year three, the second someone starts to hold you to the fire, it's not really going to matter. People are going to defend it. Then you go into 2022. Crawford's gone. Belt's gone. Samarge is gone. Cueto's almost done. Posey could be done if you want. You have a completely revamped look. Your salary cap is completely clear to go out and spend money. And you got all the young guys set to come up. 2 years from now, Bart should be coming up ready to play. Like, that's the new era. 2022 is the push. That's what they're playing for right now. You think midterms for the next president.
You think they can hold Bart off that long, Joe? Do you really believe they can hold him off? I get what you're saying because you're right. Those two, Brandon to be off the books, Posey to be off the books, you're right. And you have a young team you can spin, you can buy. You think about Samardzija be gone after that. Also, Johnny Cueto, his things. So, yes, you will have a situation where plenty of money to spend. But do you think the fans and you think they can hold Joey Bart off that long, Dibs? Do you think that can happen?
No, Joey Bart comes up this year, I think, in the 60-game sample, in part because you don't have a minor league season where you can put him in. Like, ideally, if there was no COVID, I think Joey Bart starts the year in AAA, and he's there for probably 40, 50, 60 games, and then, boom, you bring him up. You would have brought him up about this time, maybe a month earlier, not only to slow down the service time. I don't know where the deadline would have fallen, probably somewhere late May, early June, but with Buster Posey and the fact that he's getting older, and this is all assuming that he would have been here and there's no corona, you would have found a way to get him over to first more, and you would have gotten Joey Bart up here to get him some at-bats. And I also think that because of the designated hitter guys, you have an increased opportunity to let Joey Bart come up, and he doesn't have to catch. He can still be in the lineup. You can ease his way into some catching duties. I'd say of the 60 games, you're probably going to see Joey Bart on the roster for half of them, Joe. I'd say by the time we get to the 30-game mark at the latest, you'll have Joey Bart on the roster with the big club.
No way. No way. Again, wasted year. Why would you burn a year of service time just to get him some cuts at the major league level? Like, that's a lot of money. This team, they are economically challenged in the sense that they're not going out there. These are guys that exploit those loopholes. Like, that's what a guy like Farhan Zaidi does. That's not what Sabian and Evans would do, right? But that is what the new age guy does. They come in and they look for the loopholes and they realize, why would we bring Bart up now? Why would we waste a year of service time on a 60-game meaningless season that's going to produce absolutely nothing for us? He's not going to be playing in front of fans. It's not going to be a regular baseball routine where you're on the road for a 9-game stretch and you're in three different cities and then you come home and you go through all that. This is going to be a complete throwaway year. It's about survival. For the Giants, for the guys out there that are playing, you try to develop some guys, see what you've got for the future, run the service clock down on some of these other cats so you can get them out of here because they cost too much money. I don't think you play Bart at all. For what reason? Why is it giving up that year of eligibility? For what? Just so he can get a few cuts and say that he now has some experience at the big league level? No way. It's too risky. You're not going to put anyone in the stands anyway.
Yeah, but because you don't have any other real opportunity for him to play, I think that it retards his development if he's unable to go out there and at least play some baseball. And I know that there's going to be these taxi squad situations with like live BP, but it's not the same as a real live game situation. You know, you're moving on from Buster Posey sooner rather than later. You look at the contract situation, he's going to make 22.2 next year. Then it's a $3 million buyout. So you're looking at a situation where you need to figure out sooner rather than later if Joey Bart is a guy who can really command the pitching staff. And I think he showed enough last year rising through the minor league system that in a normal year, he would have gotten an opportunity this year. And so I don't think you change your course, even though you're right, service time and you start his clock and all that. They're still going to have him for, what, 5 or 6 years of team control. So that's a can that you don't necessarily have to kick down the road at the expense of seeing what you have in Joey Bart without a minor league system to really see otherwise.
Is it worth $20 million Would you pay $20 million to give him 30 games worth of cuts this year?
Yeah, I probably would.
You pay $20 million to see him take some cuts this year?
Yeah, you give him a chance to get 30 games behind the dish. You get a real chance to see what kind of player he's going to be. And if he's not the great player that you hoped he would be, it's not going to cost you $20 million. It only costs you $20 million if he turns out to be a superstar, right?
Well, no. $20 million 6 years from now for a starting catcher, wouldn't that be somewhat reasonable based on what guys are making currently? Like, if Buster's making $21 million, that was a superstar contract that was 5 or 6 years ago, 7 years ago, whenever he signed that. So you project 6 years into the future, if you don't play him this year and you have 6 full years of service time, you go 7 years into the future. If he's your everyday starter at catcher and he hits the way he can hit because he's not supposed to be a defensive catcher, he's supposed to mash a little bit, you don't think he'd be worth $20 million a year? And you're talking about $20 million for 30 games. So let's multiply that by five. That's $100 million when you project it out over 150 games. That's a lot of money for 30 games worth of at-bats.
It is, but what would be the ROI, as I borrow from Lowe in his one of his favorite expressions, the ROI, if you have Joey Bart, if you announce, hey, Bart's coming, you know, boo, 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 you get the Bart sounds, and you've got TV right. ratings that will go up, the local revenue you would figure would go up, so you're going to make a little bit of money here on the front end. It's going to cost you some on the back end. I won't deny it.
Well, hold on. What are you going to make on the front end? You can't put anyone in the seats, and does the TV deal fluctuate based on whether or not people are buying? Like, whatever NBC's paying them is flat, regardless, isn't it? I mean, it's probably prorated this year for the games, but just because Joey Bart's up and 10,000 more people watch, do the Giants get more money from that?
I think that they have some the interrelation between the station and the team is such that the team benefits from the ratings and the revenue that the station makes. I don't have all the machinations and the nuance of the contract, but I know the Giants have some ownership of some of the local properties, and I think that having Joey Bart would certainly draw more of an audience to the station, and maybe it would engender more jersey sales. You get your Bart jersey sales going out there. I think that it could help the product this year. I know what you're saying about service time and the future and the possibility of you having to pay more money sooner. I think that the Giants are going to be in a situation where they're going to need to do anything to keep the buzz that they're trying to create, because it's been a few years since they've been a really pertinent, exciting club like they used to be.
To that point, Joe, I just don't think that
Forhan's looking at it too, Joe, that he can't afford. Like you said, he's got a wasted year last year. This year is going to be, of course, this 60-game season. Can he afford to? So that's the thing that you got to look at. He's going to have some pressure from the media, the crowd, and everything
else.
He's
not going to have any pressure from the media. No one here is going to grill him on anything. We know that. That's a fact.
They may not. I just think that if you decide to go for another 2 years and not have a team that's competing, I just don't know would he have that kind of time. Would the organization and the front office, they've been used to, you know, being happy. Look, hell, they ran the skipper out of here for not, you know, getting it done after winning 3 championships. He didn't necessarily want to go. So I just don't know if they're going to be patient enough.
But the thing is, it's only 1 year, because no one cares about this year, which leads us back to why you don't sign Yasiel Puig. You have no expectations whatsoever, right? So it's Kapler's first year. It's Farhan's second. They get another free pass because Buster's out. The team's expected to stink. You don't go out and sign guys like Puig to give any expectations or any lift whatsoever. Once you're through this year, the second any pressure starts in game one next season, you just tell everyone, hey, because this is where it comes down to marketing. Marketing can be extremely powerful. The second you get to game one next year and people are like, all right, it's time to see something. Wait, wait, wait. We're building for 2022, ladies and gentlemen. Wait a minute. What does that mean? Guys, we're building for 2022. Belt's off the books. Crawford's off the books. Samarja's off the books. Posey's off the books. Johnny Cueto's 1 year away from being off the books. No more Pence. No more Sandoval. Hey, guess what? Joey Bart's going to be up. He's going to be a regular guy. Elio Ramos is going to be up. He's going to be a regular guy. We're going to have a ton of money to spend, so we're going to go out and get one or two marquee free agents to get you excited. And suddenly you're looking at this, and now you just need to sit through one more year, 2021, and then 2022 is the year. It's not going to be hard because we're already past last year. Everyone's going to throw away this year. The second you apply any pressure next season, they come out with the marketing message. It's all about 2022. Guys, this is the year we say goodbye to Brandon Belt. We say goodbye to Brandon Crawford. We say goodbye to Buster Posey. And everywhere they go, there's a big tribute night, and they get their rocking chairs and their gifts and their presents, and everyone just comes to the park to pay homage to the triplets and everything they've done for the team. And then you enjoy that season, much like we just did with Boach last year, and you get through that season, and then everyone unveils the big 2022 campaign. Bart is your regular catcher. He's your number one guy. You've got new pitchers. You got young guys coming up. You got a ton of money to spend. 2022 is the year. So there's not going to be any pressure next year, because the second anyone tries to apply it, you just unveiled the 2022 marketing message. What they're doing is genius. By the way, the idea of not playing Bart this year to save service time, who's the general manager? Scott Harris. Where was Scott Harris before he got here? Chicago with the Cubs. What did the Cubs do with Chris Bryant? They pissed off everybody in Chicago with Chris Bryant when they made him sit out the first like 9 games of the season and then brought him up for game 10 because they wanted to make sure they controlled him for one more year. Everyone was irate about that. So what would make you think he's going to come here and treat the Bart situation any differently?
I think just because of the situation without Buster Posey this year, and if it was not a COVID year, if it was a regular 162, I think you're right. They would have slow played it all the way past the service time deadline, and they still would have brought him up maybe August or September. But the fact that you don't have Buster Posey, and we talked about it before, Cueto and Pablo are your face of the franchise. You brought the Reverend Hunter Pence back. This is a team that's going to be in need of an injection of life and of youth. And so I think, even though what you said about Scott Harris, that's a great counterpoint to all this, because what he did to Chris Bryant was absolutely inflammatory. And I don't think that Joey Bart is as ready to go now as Chris Bryant was for the Cubs. And Joe, you mentioned 2022.
And the Cubs were competitive. The Cubs were competitive then.
And he was going to be able to come up and help immediately. Right now, they've got $100 million in contracts low committed for 2021. When you look at 2022, they can buy out Buster for $3 million. They will. They can buy out Cueto for $5 million. They will. The only deal remaining is Evan Longoria, who's sitting at about $20 million. So $100 million committed to next year, only $20 million on the books for 2022. I think Joe's right. When we get to the end of this year and into next year's spring training, it's going to be, oh, don't worry about this year. Deuce, deuce is what we're waiting for.
Side so note. You think that Bart won't go up then? So you change your – that do you still think
– No, I think Bart will go up. I do
me
think
too.
Bart will go up, and they'll roll the dice on the service time
me
because
too.
They need a short-term fix for what is going to – if it's another flaccid, dull year, they're going to need an injection of life, and I think he's the guy.
He might be up, but 30 games, it's all going to come down to how much counts towards the clock. Bobby Evans joined us last week. I think he was talking about how it counts as a full year of service time. It's not like you can do it in increments like you did in previous years. That's where the math gets really tricky. Quick side note, if NBC Sports Bay Area was allowed to televise these inter-squad games, would you watch them? Yesterday, I'm going through Twitter, and Pavlovich is like, just he's got his camera up, and he's live streaming this inter-squad game. And a couple of the other beat writers, Kerry Crowley, had a camera up where you can't, the camera doesn't really pan. They just set it up, and a guy ropes one, and you don't even see where it goes. I found myself sitting there staring at that stuff. And then I was thinking, couldn't you put like two cameras? Maybe just put one camera at Oracle and then put Fleming or Kruko or Kuiper or anyone. Take some of your young guys who don't get any burn. Take a couple guys like the Warriors outsiders, like Grant and why am I blanking on the names?
Drew Schiller. Because
right,
it's those Drew
two,
Schiller.
Those two are doing the Warrior stuff. Find two young people. Therese could be one. Brisby could be one. Whoever it may be. Get two of them out there to comment. Just put one camera out there showing the inner squad. Put it on TV and have two people commenting. Who says no to that? Probably the Giants, but
not
would
the,
you watch that?
Not the audience. Absolutely, I'd watch it. Especially you give me Joe Rizzo from the San Jose Giants.
Yeah, there you go.
And Doug Greenwald. Give me Doug Greenwald as well. No disrespect to Brisby and Vanal, but we'll go with the play-by-play voices from within the organization. And Lo, we're at the point now, for those of us who love baseball, I'd be willing to just watch a live stream of two guys playing catch, you know, or watching old Wotus hitting fungos to Brandon Crawford, who languidly goes over on the backhand side and slings one across to Brandon Belt. We're so baseball starved, I'll take any of that, Coach.
What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Harris Ranch Beef Company. All right, 8:30 is right around the corner, which means the moment has arrived. Number 6 on the top 10 countdown of the greatest Bay Area athletes of all time, the fan vote. Number 7 was revealed yesterday. It was Rick Barry. Number 6, Will it be a baseball mind or will it be someone else? Find out on the other side. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs.
If things go your way, we'll see you back here. One for the thumb, huh?
Yeah. Well, I don't need one. I only got four fingers, so I'm good.
On 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back, Joe Lowe and Dibs. Great to have you with us today as we get set to unveil number 6 on the top 10 greatest athletes in Bay Area sports history. Here's how it works. Every day this week, Monday through Thursday on this show, 8:30 a.m., we're revealing the even numbers. It was number 10 on Monday, number 8 on Tuesday, number 6 today. We'll do number 4 tomorrow, and then we're done. Because we don't want to unveil number 2 in the morning on Friday to where everyone's going to know number 1 in the afternoon. So the afternoon guys have been handling the odd numbers. 9, 7, 5, 3, and then they'll do 2 and 1 Friday at 3:30. Every day at 3:30. Number 10, we had Madison Bumgarner. Number 9, Steve Young. Number 8, Ronnie Lott. Number 7, Rick Barry, which brings us to today. Nice guy, Steven, if you please. Here is number 6 on the top 10 list.
It's time for the Bay Area top 10 athletes of all time. Number 6, Willie Mays.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Willie Mays, the Say Hey Kid, comes in at number 6 on the list. John Shea of the San Francisco Chronicle, who wrote a book about Willie Mays, set to join us today at 9:05 to talk about one of the greatest, if not greatest, players in not just Giants history, but in Bay Area sports history, Dibs.
An absolute treasure, a baseball treasure, Willie Mays, 89 years of age, still going strong, and I'm glad we got the chance to talk to John Shea later today because John spent hundreds of hours with Willie Mays. He knows Willie about as well as any person on the planet, and so he'll give us some insight as to just how great Willie Mays was as a player and what a great guy he is, and the fact that he's in the top 10 and down here at number 6 speaks to just how many great players we've had in the Bay Area, but many people say Willie Mays is the greatest baseball player in the history of the game. So appropriate that he's on this list, but I'm sure John Shea is going to come on and advocate for the fact that he should be higher on this list.
No doubt. Now, Willie Mays was left off of all three of our lists, and we all had the same rationale. If we weren't around to watch these guys play, it's tough to properly evaluate him. But, Lo, you've been able to do things like that when it comes to guys like Jim Brown. It doesn't diminish the achievements or the resume in any way, shape, or form, right?
Right, without a doubt. You don't take anything from Willie. I think that a lot of people do a disservice when they just throw someone up on a list and like, oh, okay, I'm putting him at 6 or I'm putting him at 5. Because there's a lot of people that argue that this guy, you know, like you said, could be higher. And there's a lot of people that haven't seen enough of Willie Mays really to give a true statement or give a true indication of what they believe. And if we just go through and just say, hey, this is what this people say about someone without doing our own research, then I think you're doing Willie Mays a disservice. So, yes, Jim Brown was one of the better running backs that ever played in his era. Without a doubt, Jim Brown was the GOAT for his era. And you got to realize, though, what was that era? Who was able to play? Was there a lot? Was it integrated as much as it is now? All the different things. Were guys, you know, strength? So that's why these things always open for debate. And there's so many different things around it, surrounding it, that we can say this and that and the other. So you don't want to give a guy like Willie Mays and do him a disservice of saying, oh, he's 4 or 5. When you could be a lot higher and you're just doing it because other people are telling you what to do, Dan.
Yeah, and I do regret not putting him on there because I was thinking in terms of guys I had seen, and I think Rick Barry was about the oldest player who I had on my top 10 list, and I barely remember Rick when I was really young playing for the Warriors, but when you look at Willie Mays' career and you look at just the numbers and the longevity and the productivity and what he was able to do at the time. And oh, by the way, Joe, he lost a year early in his career to military service. Otherwise, he would have had a chance to maybe track down Babe Ruth before Henry Aaron got there. Willie Mays ended up with 660 home runs over the course of a 22-year career, which could have been 23 if it wasn't for military service. So you look at the average and all the other numbers, wins above replacement, which they didn't have in his time. But his numbers are so dominant, they match up with any player in history.
He's listed as a 24-time All-Star, a World Series champion in 1954, two-time NL MVP, 54 and 65. He won an MVP in 54 and then did it again 11 years later. The NL Rookie of the Year, 12-time Gold Glove Award winner, Roberto Clemente Award, that was 1971, the NL batting champion, the four-time NL home run leader, 55, 62, 64, and 65, four-time NL stolen base leader, 56, 57, 58, and 59. He hit four home runs in a single game, April 30th, 1961. His numbers retired for the Giants. That's number 22, 24. The Giants Wall of Fame, Major League Baseball All-Century Team, Major League Baseball All-Time Team. It's tough because the honest truth of the matter is that he should be higher. He should be above Steph Curry. He should be above Ricky Henderson, and I got a feeling Ricky Henderson is going to be above here. We've got five more to go. So if we're projecting out based on the groupthink, in no particular order, you're going to have Jerry and Joe and Barry and Steph and Ricky Henderson. That would be the projection for the final five. I haven't seen the list. I'm not giving away the list. I think it's just pretty easy to project. So with those five, to have Willie Mays behind Ricky Henderson, it's criminal. Ricky Henderson's one of the all-time greats, but his numbers don't stack up with what Willie Mays did. Willie Mays has a longer and more productive career than Steph Curry. It's tough to argue that. Steph's got more chips, but can you blame Willie Mays for not having more rings? He's a baseball player. How much can he really impact the game? Do you put him above Barry Bonds based on everything he's done? You want to ride with Bonds? Okay. There's a little bit of question mark there at the end of Bonds' career, as we all know. And then Joe and Jerry. Without one, would the either have done what they did? Without Bill Walsh, would either have done what they did? So the reality is Willie Mays is taking a significant hit because he played so long ago. This is recency bias. This is where we're at with this. So anytime we talk about that and you wonder what we're bringing up, recency bias, we're so much more inclined to believe or support anything we've just seen than something that occurred 20, 30, 40, or 50 years ago. But if you just replace Willie Mays with literally anyone else on this list, you're probably going to see Willie Mays low, number one overall, to be honest.
Yeah, and you could see, if once you go through this list and look at it, and I wish you could have seen, you probably it would have been easier for us to say definitely number one. But like you said, it's recency bias. You look at Steph Curry set the all time 3-point shooting record, and you say, oh my God, Steph Curry, and everyone, no one really know Willie Mays, so they're looking at Steph and saying, God, this record, how long is it going to stand? He may break it again, and what he's been able to do and eclipse from the 3-point game has been unprecedented. Then you look at Joe Montana, the four Super Bowls, and being San Francisco. And the legend lives on, and of course Jerry Rice. But if you just say, hey, look, individually, what did this guy stand for, and who was Willie Mays? I think that if you're looking at just far as this, that's why I think this list is subject to criticism, because if you just said who's the greatest and who was the best athlete and just athletic achievement, then you'd look at Willie Mays and you would have to say Willie Mays and Jerry Rice. Well, give me two guys that has a better resume than Willie Mays and Jerry Rice, far as their particular sports, because Jerry is considered the greatest receiver ever. And look at his numbers. So I think it's simple. If you said, hey, just with athletic accomplishments and being in an elite, I think it's those two guys for that. But if you're talking about athletic ability, you wouldn't say that. You would have to say athletic ability. Dion's athletic ability was way more superior than a lot of these guys. So how do you really give you a fair, and he's a Hall of Famer and he's got chips, all those different things. So how do we compare this thing? And that's the thing that you'll never be able to have a consensus, because the question was viewed that gives you so many reasons and so gives you so much till deep and with dibs of trying to find a correct answer.
Yeah, and I think that it's good that the question was so broad, because we came up with different interpretations and different lists. And I think Joe highlighted that when he led off for everyone and he laid out the way he looked at it. And then you looked at it differently, and then I looked at it differently. And I regret not putting Willie Mays on there because I wasn't having enough perspective of what had gone on before me. And I didn't have Wilt Chamberlain on there either, but he had a much shorter stint in the Bay than certainly Willie Mays did. And I'm glad you made the comparison to Jerry Rice, Lo, because you look at Willie Mays and the fact that he played like Jerry into his 40s. We talked about Jerry's 40-year-old year when he had 92 catches with the Raiders, mind-boggling. And you look at Willie Mays in his second-to-last year as a Giant, drove in 61 runs, and he played in 140 games. So the longevity factor of both of these all-time greats is something that definitely should have been taken into account on
exactly.
My list.
Well, think about this, too. Baseball players, the more I go back and look at this, probably deserve a higher standing than they're getting versus anybody else. Baseball is the only sport where it's just you against the opponent, the true measure. How often are you dependent on your teammates in baseball? Like, how many of the stats that actually matter are dependent upon teammates? Home runs have nothing to do with teammates. You can talk about protection in the order, but bottom line, it's you versus the opposition. When you're in the field, it's you versus the opposition. Bonds playing left field, no one's going to help him catch a ball. He's got to make that play. He's got to hit the relay. But ultimately, all the glory stats, going to an all-star game, we base that on average, on base, slugging. RBIs are obviously dependent upon, excuse me, other players getting on base. And steals are not. You get on base like Ricky Henderson, you swipe that bag. You don't need anyone else to do anything except screw that up. So the reality is with Joe Montana, you can sit there and you can talk about Bill Walsh, his offensive line, John Taylor, Jerry Rice, the running game and the defense. With Rice, you can talk about the fact that he was drafted by Bill Walsh and had Joe Montana and Steve Young throwing to him for the majority of his career. With Rick Barry, you can talk about his teammates. With Steph, if he's still on this loser organization with no Clay, no Draymond, no Bob Myers and Jerry West and Steve Kerr to come in and clean this thing up, how far are they going? Is Steph destined to be Kemba Walker? Now, people are going to get upset with that, but Kemba and Charlotte couldn't even make the playoffs because he had no one around him. Steph, obviously a better player, but how far could he have gone without his teammates? And then there's Bonds and Mays, where every single day, every time you're at the dish, it's you versus the opposition, no help from your teammates. And every single day you take the field, no help from your teammates. Sure, you got to hit a good relay. And if the relay gets in and you get knocked the runner out, then boom, you end up getting an assist. No one's looking at that. All-star games, all the big stuff, gold gloves, home runs, everything that people actually care about, it's individual. So when you have a guy that rolls up that much individual credibility, it's easier to judge his success versus anyone else's. It really is. Because if you put Jerry Rice on the Cleveland Browns, Jerry Rice ain't going to be Jerry Rice. I've said this about Tom Brady forever. If Joe Montana ends up with the Jacksonville Jaguars later in his career, he ain't going to end up being Joe Montana. Great players in the NFL can only go so far if they're surrounded by inept ownership, inept front offices, and bad teammates. You put good players in good situations, you get good results. But we've seen a lot of bad players in bad spots get nothing. And that happens in the NBA as well. So to be honest, if you sit down here and you really slice it, the baseball greatness should be probably weighted a little bit heavier than the basketball greatness or the football greatness, in my opinion.
And Joe, you said something that caught me flat-footed, Lo, and that is 24 All-Star game appearances. He has more All-Star game appearances than he does years in the league. So if you want to throw out a bar trivia bet, you go up to somebody and say, Willie Mays played 22 years in the major leagues. How many All-Star games did you make? I'll sit here and wait with all the guesses. 22, 21, maybe 19. No one would think to say 24 because they used to have two All-Star games in a season. And, of course, Willie would make both of those.
Yeah. It's amazing just looking at what he was able to do. But you know what? It goes to show you, though, if you look at greatness, and that's where, Joe, I'm in a little different church than you. I'm in a different church because you are right that certain guys wouldn't have been who they are if they didn't have certain people or wasn't on a great team to give them the opportunity. And look what Willie did. And you look at it no further than Barry Sanders. He was played with trash. You look at a guy like Jerry. If you put a Jerry on a team, would he have still become Jerry? I think you can look at some receivers. You look at certain guys around the league that if they would have been on great teams, like, oh, my God, that guy would have tore it up. But still, Barry, Jerry, certain guys, Willie Mays, certain guys just have that it factor. Hell, when you look at LT, what he did with the Chargers before they became the Chargers, think about what he was doing. So you can look at certain guys, and that those certain guys, you're like, oh my goodness, that is a player, the Deion Sanders. That's why he's in these conversations, because it doesn't matter what the team is doing around them. You see a guy play at such a higher level than everyone else that you got to shake your head and say, oh my God. And that's what some of these guys are.
They can still be elite players, but they're never going to be the greatest of the great. That's what we're slicing right now. The greatest of the great has that around them when it comes to team sports. That's the difference. Jerry Rice would still have been a great wide receiver. But he's not going to be the greatest of all time if he doesn't end up in San Francisco, because he doesn't have the most innovative offense ever with Bill Walsh. He doesn't have one of the three greatest quarterbacks ever with Joe Montana. He doesn't get to all those Super Bowls without the defense, the offensive line, and everybody else. It doesn't happen. Jerry's work ethic, Jerry's talent, and everything Jerry's capable of doing, that greatness, like you would say, is unmutable. It's there. But if you're on a team with bad ownership, bad coaching, and bad players, you can only do so much. You can only catch so many passes that are 12 feet above your head. You can only catch so many passes that don't exist when you're running the ball 45 times a game. And you can't win Super Bowls if you're on a bad football team. So that takes away from the legacy as well. So football is dependent upon that. Yeah, LT and Barry would have still been great. But Barry never goes down as the greatest of all time. He's in that category, but you never talk about him as the number one. Only a few guys make that case, and there's a good case to be made.
Well, who do we say is then? If we don't say Barry, if we don't say guys like Jim Brown who didn't win Super Bowls, who do we say is the greatest running back at all time? Because I think
that
Barry
slice it a few different ways on that one. Walter Payton's one that you would throw up there. Walter Payton rushed for more yards and had a Super Bowl.
Nah,
it's tough to tell me Barry is better than Walter. You can make the case, but a lot of people will side with Walter because he's got the pedigree. This is where you and I have a disconnect on these debates. I know what you're talking about because you think I'm knocking down the player. I'm not. The greatness of the player is not going to change, but you can't roll up the numbers Jerry Rice rolled up without Bill Walsh and without Joe Montana. You just can't do it. And if you can't roll up those numbers, you can be great, but are you the greatest? See, right now we're having a conversation about the greatest of all time. We're not talking about the 10 best receivers of all time. We're talking about the literal greatest players of all time. And if Steph never has Clay and Draymond and Steve and Andre, if he's just on if Steph's with the Chicago Bulls, he ain't Steph Curry. He's a really good shooter. And a lot of people talk about how he's underrated and that if he just got on a great team, he might be one of the best in the game. But there are some really good NBA players that are on these. What do we make of Dame Lillard? Right? Like, what do we make of Dame Lillard? What if Dame Lillard got to do what LeBron does and show up on a team with a bunch of guys around him? Remember, LeBron was one thing in Cleveland, and then when he got a great team with Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra in Miami, suddenly he started winning chips. That's the legacy. That's what puts you over the top. If LeBron stays in Cleveland forever, he's never chasing down Jordan because he's never playing for the championships on a frequent basis. But once he goes to Miami and he starts forming super teams, he now has great coaching around him. He now has great teammates around him. And his greatness is on display every Saturday night because he's in a primetime game. And every June because he's in the finals. That's the thing. You've got to be able to see the greatest of the great ply their craft at the greatest level. And Jerry Rice would still be a great receiver. But if he was on a lousy team,
yeah,
could he really go down as the greatest of all time?
I think that the name I keep popping up in my head is Larry Fitzgerald over and over and over. Because when we talk about the greatest receivers of all time, we go with Rice, Owens, Moss. And we don't get to Larry Fitzgerald, maybe not even fourth in line. But you look at the stats, he's second in nearly every category, yet he had just the one Super Bowl appearance. And Joe, to your point about Jerry playing, you know, for Bill Walsh and with Montana and with Young, Fitzgerald had what, two seasons of Kurt Warner? And other than that, it was Ryan Lindley and Jake the Snake and a series of other retreads and cast-offs, and yet he's gone on to have a first ballot Hall of Fame career. Yet, to your point, he's not ever considered to be the greatest receiver of all time. So team success does, in this conversation, I think, change the narrative.
It's huge. Let's do this. Okay, let's do a little study here when it comes to team sports. Who's the greatest basketball player of all time? You can give me three names. I don't need the number one, but give me three guys.
Michael Jordan, everyone's going to say, of course.
Sure. And then
LeBron James.
Sure. And anyone else and you want to throw in?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. We'll throw him in there.
How many combined titles do they have? And how many Hall of Famers did they play alongside? And who are their coaches? Kareem played with a ton of Hall of Famers.
Yep.
Michael played with Hall of Famers and had Phil Jackson. And LeBron, we already laid out the case. He's played with some great talent all the way around. Now, all those guys are great players, but they also have the greatness around them that helps them totally fulfill their destiny. So no one can question. Who's the greatest hockey player of all time? That's not even a question. Gretzky, how many rings does he have? Like, he won a bunch in Edmonton before he even went to L.A. Like, Gretzky had great... Gretzky is an all-timer, but again, still in a position to do everything he needed to do. Who are the greatest football players of all time? First thing that comes to mind, Tom Brady. Oh, he just so happens to have 6 rings and 9 Super Bowl appearances. And then you hear about Joe Montana. Every guy at the top of the list for greatest football players of all time, they all have rings. Lawrence Taylor, if you want to go defense, has rings. He had Bill Parcells as his coach. He had a great offense around him, too. You work your way around those sports, all the greatest guys also had great players around him, which was able to put them on that highest level. And Dibs makes an excellent point. Larry Fitzgerald will never go down as one of the greatest receivers of all time. But if you put him in Jerry Rice's spot, you don't think he wins a couple Super Bowls and people view him differently? That's where baseball gets weighted, because that's you versus the opponent. Your teammates mean less in baseball than in any other sport.
I just don't know if Larry Fitzgerald was explosive like Jerry. I think that there's other guys that we could say that how do you consider they're great. And I think if you look at Randy Moss, how many Super Bowls he win? But you wouldn't tell me that if Larry Fitzgerald was better than Randy Moss. You look at a lot of guys, Megatron. I think that if you look at certain, that's what the only point that I'm making is certain guys. You say that, but then if we take Miami and put Jerry with the quarterback of Dan Marino, I mean, Dan Marino's top 5 quarterbacks of all time. Of course, he didn't win a Super Bowl, so that's why we hold that. But so you look at certain guys and you say, my goodness, the Barry Sanders. And I totally understand what you guys are saying too, but I'm just saying there's certain guys, the Megatrons, there's certain guys, the Barrys, there's certain guys, no matter if they won championships or not, they're great. Then you say there might be the greatest of all time. There's just certain guys that have that it factor. And that's why when we're talking about the baseball and we're talking about a guy that should have been higher, Willie, this whole conversation about Willie didn't have all the things that made the other team. So he is on this list and they're talking about he's the greatest. This, we're not saying it because we didn't see him play. But these other guys, there's something about them that just makes these guys more unique than others. They just got an extra gift of that, no matter if they won championships or not.
But how would we view Megatron if he won 2 Super Bowls? We'd view him differently than we do now, would we not?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's exactly the point. He's still a great player. The only thing you add to the equation is a good organization around him that leads to 2 Super Bowls, and now he's in the all-time category. People make the case
he's,
for him
he's
now,
in the all-time right now. He's not in the GOAT conversation.
If
he didn't win a Super Bowl and he didn't get and he decided to keep playing and he did not stop playing, I think there was an argument for him to be the great. To be, next to Jerry. People said this guy may be the closest thing, but what he was able to do, he played at a different level than everyone else. That's the only thing that I'm saying. But you're right. I understand if they win a Super Bowl, yes, or they're going to have, it's going to be viewed even more. So I do understand what you guys are saying.
But when you get into the GOAT conversation, there's so many boxes that you have to check to really be among the GOATs. And one of them is, did you win a championship or not? And unless you have extraordinarily great offensive numbers above and beyond everyone else, a lot of times we, when we look at it, are going to default to players who actually won a chip, which is why in this conversation, and I think you're right, Lo, if Barry Sanders plays 6 or 7 more years, he becomes much more in the conversation. But because his career got cut short, he cut it short on his own. That hurts him, as does not having a championship.
I mean, he literally quit because his team sucked.
Right.
Barry Sanders left football as a guy who was going to go down with all the records because he looked around at the organization and he said, this is trash. I'm done with this. Like the player greatness is never in doubt. It's just the ability for the masses to see it. That's the thing. Lo, it doesn't take you very long to understand what great is. But for people who watch this stuff, they need to see it on Monday Night Football, they need to see it in January, and they need to see it in February. Nobody watches offensive line play. Nobody watches anything except the quarterback dropping back and then following the football based on where it goes. That's what it all comes down to. the team aspect, the component of it, is so important. There are so many good players who are just languishing on bad teams. I mean, look at Deshaun Watson. What could Deshaun Watson be if Bill O'Brien wasn't his head coach? Like, if Watson was with Belichick and he had a good offensive line, where could he be right now? Some of these guys, the talent is there. We see it. It's just they can't get it together or put it to the next level where they're truly in the greatest of the great category because they don't have those extra boxes checked. We don't watch them in January because their team and their franchise suck. That sucks for those guys. It really does.
Right. It does. This is a great conversation because this one is pretty heat. I enjoy it. I'm enjoying it, Dibbers.
Nice.
Well, we aim to please around here. Yeah. Joe Lowe and Dibbs 95.7.
Guys, I'm just taking a look at Willie Mays' and Barry Bonds' baseball references page, and it's eerie how similar their careers are, but Willie Mays, 10 times in a row, 10 years consecutively, from 1957 all the way to 1966, he was an all-star, he was in the MVP voting, and he also had a gold glove. 10 consecutive years. Barry Bonds did it 5. Now, the MVP numbers were different because Bonds obviously was an MVP more times, but still, 10 years in a row on a baseball reference page, that jumps out. Like, that needs to be respected. You don't do that. Players don't do that normally.
John Shea is going to join us in like 10 minutes. He's going to slap us around for this. And if you just switched Willie Mays, like I said, with Steph Curry, and you sent Steph back to the old days and you had Willie Mays playing now, Willie Mays would be your unanimous number one. But we have a younger audience, and that means we have younger viewers, and we have a bunch of guys on the station who aren't even voting for Willie Mays because we didn't see him play. So ultimately, one of the all-time greats isn't even getting the support he needs from an argument perspective because no one's seen him. No one knows how to defend it. That's why I took this tack for this half hour. I left him off the list, and I told you flat out I wasn't going with any guys I had never seen before. Because how can you take me seriously if that's the case, if I've never watched him play, right? I can go back and do what Nice Guy just did. I can tell you all about his Wikipedia page and his baseball reference page, but I never saw him play. It's really tough to make that call in that situation, but it's not doing him justice. At 6 on the list, completely. Like, the fact that Ricky Henderson's going to be ahead of him. Was Ricky Henderson a better baseball player? Come on. Ricky Henderson was awesome, but he's not better than Willie Mays.
If you put together an all-time 9, an all-time starting 9 from Major League Baseball's history, Willie Mays is your center fielder, and you probably bat him 5th. You could hit him 3rd in that all-time lineup. You know, we could go through it. I don't know if you put Bonds on there, Ricky Henderson or Bonds in left field. There's great debate to be made. But in the history of baseball, of all, whatever, 100,000 guys who've ever appeared in a Major League game, Willie Mays is your starting center fielder. So I feel shame, and hopefully John's listening and he doesn't chastise me too harshly. Remember, Mr. Shea, I did give you a break when you blew up at me when I was reffing your CYO game about 4 years ago. I didn't tee you up, so hopefully he won't go in on me for leaving Willie off my list.
Have some backbone, all right? First of all, don't pander to him, and second of all, don't go back on your list. You laid out a good list last week, and now you're immediately caving in on it. Have some backbone. God. Stand by it. If we're going to get slapped around, we're getting slapped around together.
Never flounder to fish. Come on. Just stick by it. And you gave your reason why, and now you're making all this case for Willie. Well, you hit it that last time, Dibs. Just let
it
go.
I'm going to go put on my old St. Louis Rams Flipper Anderson jersey, Lo. Because I'm flipping all over the place right now.
All right,
old Flipper Anderson.
John Shea is going to slap us around next here on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.